Welcome to Creating Cash Flow for August 21st, 2022. Beth.
Okay, so I'm a very conscientious, organized, detail-oriented attorney. I'm helping a relative with a case, which it may be a mistake, but I feel like complaining about the person. So basically, this young guy is upset that I didn't send the documents to immigration that he gave me 6 months ago. Well, there's a very good reason for that. We don't send those documents until you get an appointment notice or a request to submit evidence. And he's sending me back the same documents and saying, here are the documents. And I'm saying, I sent you a detailed checklist detailing what we have and what I still need you to get. And it's like, there's almost like there's a disconnect with some of these young people, like there's something wrong with their brain. They can't focus or pay attention to information requests, and they like to put everything off on other people and refuse to engage in the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And he's angry that I didn't send the documents he sent 6 months ago, which were preliminary things I was trying to help them gather with the idea that we would gather more at the time of the interview. Should be very simple for them to print out their bank statements for every month, their utility bills for every month, their proof of their gym membership, their 2021 tax return. That shouldn't be that hard. All he's doing is throwing back and say, I sent you these documents 6 months ago, and he's not paying any attention to anything that I'm asking for. So I asked them to please make an appointment with me. And he said, 10:30 tomorrow. I said, well, what time zone? I just said, I'm sending this in Pacific time. I know they live in Pacific. He was in visiting Arizona, but I'm sending it for 10:30 Pacific. And I think she's the wife, who is the immigrant, is a lot more rational than he is. But his dad, who's my first cousin, who paid for the case, sent me this irate email saying, Joey said you didn't send the documents that he gave you 6 months ago. And nobody has asked me how the process works. Nobody will listen to me tell them how the process works. I'm feeling very disrespected and very upset with them.
Okay. Understandably so. Totally. Yeah. What's your question? Like, do you have a question or?
Well, I mean, the thing is, it's a pattern in this family. And, just the pattern is for them not to respect me. They've decided I'm not a person who's worthy of respect.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really making me angry.
And now that you have that information from them that they don't consider you a person to respect, what are you going to do?
Well, I mean, unfortunately, I feel like I can't drop this case. All I can try to do is hammer some sense into this kid's head and try to explain to him how this works and what's going on.
Okay. So what's interesting is there's two things in what you just said. All I can do is hammer some sense into this kid's head and explain what's going on. I actually think you only need to do one of those things. So sending again an email going, okay, guys, I'm going to lay it all out for you. And if what you read in this email is not to your liking, you are absolutely free to start this case again with another person. But this is all I have to say to you. Lay it all out, and then they have it in written form. You have a paper trail that you...
Yeah, I did it twice. I went through the evidence that they had sent me and said, this is the additional evidence I need.
Right.
Then without reading that, he emails me back and said, I'm upset
right.
You didn't send this document, these documents that I sent 6 months ago.
Okay.
I wrote him back again and I patiently said, this is the reason I need additional documents. Here is the list of additional documents.
No, I heard you
that
the first time, Beth. I totally heard you. So unless you want to write it all out again, because I know you've already explained this to them. and you're setting up a meeting tomorrow to re-explain it to them in person. That can be done. I would suggest you release the expectation of trying to hammer some sense into him, because A, not your job. B, probably he, again, not open to hearing you on that subject.
I think the wife is. I think the wife is a lot more sensible.
Well, is she going to be, if she's
she should be at the meeting, and I just left her a voicemail message telling her it's at 10:30 Pacific. And I emailed her and him.
Okay, great. You have no control over how they are managing their life and absorbing the information or not absorbing the information. You've given them the information. The information doesn't change, no matter how many times you say it. There's only so many ways you can explain it. It is what it is. So you can choose to conserve your energy and pull it back from them, to energetically disconnect from them, and then go over here and try to deal and process your emotions around that. It sucks to be disrespected. I understand your emotions, but you are giving them a lot of your mental headspace right now, free of charge. And that's on you. That's your choice. You've set up beach chairs and allowed them all to hang out in there, up there. Yeah, you don't have to do that. They're going to do what they do.
I explained it to the dad, who actually happens to be a lawyer. I explained to him, we can't submit the evidence until they write us with information about where to send it.
I know, you've done your job.
Yeah.
You're doing a fine job. The way they're reacting to you doing your job doesn't mean you're not doing a good job. And you're not going to get kudos from them, probably. You're probably not even going to get much appreciation or thanks. But you probably knew that going in, I guess.
I know. I didn't realize what a spoiled brat this kid was.
Okay. But now you do. Now you know. Yeah. Now you have that information. So there's no need to be surprised anymore. Oh, it is what it is. There they are.
Yeah. I mean, the wife from Russia is actually a lot cooler. She's a level-headed, intelligent person. I think I just need to deal with her, because ultimately it's her case anyway.
Yeah. It's your business. You can decide how you interact. Just deal with her.
But what really upset me was the dad texting me and basically yelling at me for something that he understood nothing about. Even though he's a lawyer, he doesn't work in this area of law and doesn't understand the process either.
Right. And we don't need to talk about that anymore.
Right.
They're nuts. Like, they're volatile. They're not detail-oriented. They're not respecting you. So there's no more, we don't need to, you and I don't need to talk about that anymore. I get it. Those are the facts. But is there a issue that you have about how you're handling it on your end, or how to?
Well, I mean, the thing is, I'm a perfectionist. I try to do a thorough job. He's resisting, basically saying, I sent you a few things a few months ago. I don't want to bother with it. I don't want to help you do a thorough job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you feel thwarted by this client who's not cooperating with you in the way that you would like, making this not a pleasant experience. But it sounds like you've decided that you're going to see the case through.
I'm going to try to see the case through.
Okay, so that's your decision. Great. So the choice you have is, am I going to give it this much energy and this much of my brain space and this much of my agitation, or am I going to give it this much? you're disturbing you right now. When someone, let's say, sends you an angry text, that's them putting that on you. But you talking to me right now about it is you disturbing you. They're not even here right now. You're actually not even talking to them right this minute. And yet they're so disturbing you right now. So this is you and your mind right now, spin cycling around their disrespect and how much you wish you could, they would just all disappear. Yeah, but you have the power to stop this, to slow this down and not make it a huge energy leak. We want the other person to change so that we can feel better. Oh my God, if they would just calm down and cooperate, I would feel better. They're not going to change. So if you want to feel better, you have to work on what's going on in here. Mm-hmm. You don't have to, but if you want to feel better, they're not going to do that for you. You're going to do that for you. Does that make sense? Does that?
Yeah. I mean, usually I, when things like this happen, I work it off through exercise. I think I need to go, I use the rowing machine. Yeah. That is usually what happens, but
totally.
It pisses me off. I feel very insulted by, mm-hmm. you know, they're not understanding and they're not willing to talk. They're just saying, here are the papers, just send what I sent you 6 months ago, and not willing to have a discussion or dialogue to let me explain to them what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Try not to have clients like this.
Yeah. I try not. I generally don't.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's hard when there's relations because you kind of feel like, oh, I'll make an exception, but it's not worth it. Obviously.
Well, I didn't realize he would be like this. I didn't realize, but I realized that he has a problem.
And something you might reflect on while you're doing the rowing is that not just for this client, I understand you're going to see the case through because it's already been started, but I would be interested in what was the first red flag of behavior that person showed you before you kind of got the case started and got too far into it, that you could have said, you know what, I don't think we're a good match. And with that tone of voice, I'm not going to have you as a client. Nobody speaks to me like that.
Well, the thing is, the dad hired me, and I didn't really realize then that dealing with his son would be this hard.
Right. But then the first time you realized the son is, I don't want to work with this. Could you not have, I'm just saying for the future, could you not have like refunded the money and just been like, I'm not taking you as a client because I don't work with people like who aren't cooperative.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing is like, he'll text doc. I mean, I sometimes it's a generational thing, but they'll text documents to you and it makes it hard for me. It's a hard way for me to, you know, to save documents. I have a lot
say,
of
I don't accept
do
text documents. This is your yeah. business. You can dictate right. how you run it and dictate what the rules are, or they can go find another lawyer. There's other lawyers out there. Right. They don't have to use you. These are your business, your rules. And that might be difficult for you to do based on your upbringing or the conditioning you have. It might be a hard thing to set these boundaries, but it's these boundaries that will save you from evenings where you have to spend time feeling like this. Yeah. My clients, I do no business over text, no business over text. All business communication is email, period. And if someone needs to contact me by phone, it's a very specific phone number. And that phone does not take texts because I don't do business over text. It's like you just can set rules and then allow people to follow them. And that's part of what builds respect. Is when you say no, and they're like, oh, what do you mean no? It's like, yeah, you can go find somebody else. So then this is a good thing to play around with your next client. Oh, well, let me see. Are they following the rules? And if they follow the rules, then we can continue to do business. Would it have been hard for you to set those boundaries with this client?
Well, now at least they're emailing me things. But the thing is, they emailed me exactly the same thing.
But let's go back to the question. Would it have been, do you have a difficult time setting boundaries like that? Is that a natural thing for you, or where does it?
I mean, I have generally, I will not jump when a client calls. I will work I work certain hours, and I'm not a slave to my clients.
Good. Yeah.
But I just went to see what they sent me, and they sent me exactly the same thing that they sent me 6 months ago, which I already have. Right. And I asked them for additional things.
Great. So now the rest of your evening's free.
Yeah.
You don't need to think about them. You don't need to think about them at all. What are you getting, if I may inquire? What are you getting out of thinking about them? Because you're getting something out of it, or you wouldn't be doing it. That seems counterintuitive. But you're getting something out of
I guess what I'm getting is a sense of the family dynamic.
Now, what are you? There's something about you chewing on this chew toy. Ooh, they're disrespecting me and wanting to tell all the stories about it that feels good. That gives you a hit of something. Can you kind of identify anything that you might be getting from this, from the stewing on it?
Just my own boundaries. What I'm getting is a sense of the boundaries that I need to set.
Yeah, yes. I'm sort of thinking that maybe this feeling of righteousness, because you're right, they are wrong, you are right. And you get to feel right when you explain to me, when you explain to somebody else how wrong they are. You get to feel right, which feels good, and it feels empowering. Are you willing to trade feeling right for feeling peaceful? Because you can choose to stoke that feeling of righteousness, or you can choose to create a more calm, letting it go, talk to them on Monday.
Yeah, I mean, the way I do it is I process it through exercise. It helps me get, you know, when I'm upset, I process it through exercise.
Yeah. I'm glad you have a good processing tool that works for you, for sure. But you are right. And in the future, here's the good news. You've already set a boundary in your business about, I don't jump when clients call. I work between these hours. And you've been able to hold that boundary, which means you will be able to hold the boundary of don't send me things over text, and hold a boundary of if you talk to me in that tone, I can't work with you. Like, you will be able to hold other boundaries because you've already been able to hold that one. So maybe, I don't know if you already have this, but a little one sheet that new clients get from you that details.
I did. Last March, I sent them the detailed sheet of instructions.
Great.
And they sent me some of the evidence. And right.
The details how you work. with clients, not
that's what it's telling me. I need to do more upfront explaining the whole process and how I work when I take in a new client.
Yes. And it would be good to put that in writing.
Yeah.
So you can say it verbally and then send them the PDF or shove the sheet across the table to them where it's like, I only work these hours. This is the number you call me. Do not send me documents over text. Send me documents this way. Like, so they have the whole thing.
Yeah. No, I realize that, I have to do better with my initial intake documents.
Yep. Yep. That
because will. They're freaking out over something that they don't understand, thinking I made a mistake and I didn't. They just haven't communicated with me for me to be able to explain to them what it is.
Yeah, but you didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can.
I was expecting an appointment. Instead, the government sent a request for evidence, which they do sometimes if they're considering adjudicating things without an interview. They looked at it and said, we don't have enough evidence.
I don't want more. Beth, we're done talking about it.
Okay.
You've already convinced me you're doing a fine job. You're absolutely right. You know your shit. You've got to stop yourself from talking about it. Because that's stirring you up and it's going to mean more hours on the rowing machine. But you are stirring yourself up. Don't do that. And better intake, which is a very valuable, by the way, this lesson with these people, if you get nothing out of it, then tighten up your intake. Oh, that is going to help you not ever have to do this again.
I mean, we do have a questionnaire. My paralegal sent the questionnaire. But I think I have to have a much more formal initial letter from the attorney explaining the whole process, which has gotten wonky during COVID. Things have not been normal.
Yeah. Yeah. So could you do an experiment for the rest of this evening? Don't talk about it. To yourself, to anybody else. Because you don't need to. I get it. Totally. I believe you 100%. It sucks 100%. But now just have a good evening and do some rowing and do something fun. Can you do that?
Yeah, I can.
I highly recommend it. Cool. But I'm sorry that you're dealing with that for sure. And tighten up that intake. It'll help so much.
Yeah, I need to explain better because they freaked out when they got the request.
Okay, we're not talking about it for the rest of the evening, though, remember? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Thank you, Beth. Thank you for starting us off. Sarah?
Hello.
Hello.
I had a question. So I wasn't going to come on tonight because I feel like I haven't had any cash flow ideas or questions. And but then I realized I was talking to a friend and I do sort of have a side business that I don't really focus on it though, but people will just come to me. And since I worked in politics, I do consulting work for campaigns and whatnot. So I did some of that this weekend. I did a training for somebody and I charged $100. And then I thought I was charging a good price, but afterwards I was I have to charge $200 next time. So there's that. But basically I don't have any sort of gumption right now to start this side business. I don't know. I just feel like I don't have a lot of ambition to do it. And at the same time, I really want to have a second source of income, just so I feel more secure in my other job. But the thing is, though, I have felt insecure in every job I've ever had. So this is very old story I tell, yeah, but at the same time, I do want a second source of income, and I feel stuck. And so, and then my friend asked me, she said, like, well, I'd be curious, like, what do you think you're gonna, like, how is like a second source of income gonna make you feel? And I was like, oh, like, that's such a good question, because I hadn't thought about that. But I think a second source of income will make me feel more secure. And then okay, I feel like I have a cash flow question now, just in terms of like, what am I stuck on about like this? And I don't know. Did that make any sense?
Mm-hmm. Actually, totally did. Okay. Do you have energy at the moment for a side business?
No, I'm like moving next week, and I've been living with my family for the past 2 months, which has been very stressful. And I started a new job.
Yeah.
So that's a good question.
Yeah.
I didn't think about that.
Because that's part of how it's part of how will a side income make you feel? Well, at the moment, it would also make you feel very tired.
Right.
You are a woman with gumption. You are a woman with good ideas, and you are a woman with ambition. So when right. You're not in touch with you're like, oh, I don't feel motivated. I'm not in touch with my gumption and ideas. And yeah, it's because you're tired. And when you refill your tanks, you will have gumption and ambition, and those things aren't there all the time. They take energy. Gumption and ambition and ideas and new things and new side business. You don't sound to me like you have that right now. And not just because you're talking to me on a Sunday evening. It's not that. I can hear. And when you're normally like this, and you're kind of not in touch with how you normally are, it usually, first thing I look at is how is your energy tanks? Because I think if you're not living with your parents and you're getting more sleep, and you'll feel all the Sarah will return. I am not worried. So is there a side business in your future, even if you have a 40-hour a week job? I actually think there is. Now might not be the time.
Okay.
Sometimes the reason we don't get ideas, the reason the muse doesn't visit, he's like, oh, you don't want me now. Now is, I'll come. I'll come when the time is right. You haven't lost her. You haven't lost your muse.
Okay.
Your money-making muse. Okay, so that's one thing.
Yeah. That's really helpful.
You're going to feel it. But we are cyclical beings. As humans, and especially as females, anyone with a female anatomy is much more cyclical and in tune with that. And so but in general, humans, we expand and then we contract, just like breath. It can't be just expand.
Right.
Contraction. And you are in a moment of contraction of like, I got to get through this. I got to refill my energy tanks. And don't tell yourself a story during this time that you've lost it.
Yeah.
Time's running out. I've lost my mojo. It's like, no. It will all come back when you're ready to, and expand again. Don't worry about it. And it's going to, and if you pay attention to this rhythm and honor it, it'll come back faster. You want to prolong it? Your mojo and your muse staying away? Oh, then definitely resist where you are now and try to grind. There's your recipe for making it longer. Okay, so that's one thing.
Yeah.
The second thing I want to talk about is the feeling of insecurity, because you're absolutely 1000% right. Because the question would be, well, okay, Sarah, how much money do you need to earn on the side that's just suddenly going to make you feel secure? You know what your answer would be? The exact same amount of money you're currently earning in your job. I need to have my job income, and I need to have a side income that's exactly as my job income, so that if I lose my job, nothing changes. I think that's
terrible. That was literally what I would have said.
Yes. Yes. Because you're looking at the side income as sort of like this security backup for the job.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, that's usually, there are occasions, there's outliers certainly where side businesses like blow up while the person's still making the money. But I also think the person is not sleeping while that is happening. But usually you have your job, and if you build a side business, there comes a point where the job needs to start shrinking if you want the side business. You know, it's, they can't just keep growing both.
Yeah.
I got to a point where every time the acting career grew, the organizing shrank. And if the organizing grew, the acting shrank. And it was like, oh, shoot, if I want something to grow, I have to pick. It came to that point. So, which means it's 1% possible for you to have your full-time job income and a side business that is earning the exact same amount. It's just not even worth trying for. So what do you do then? Genuinely, a feeling of security comes from within.
Yeah.
Because I think even if you got that 1% possibility of your earning, let's say $100,000 at your job, $100,000 at your side biz.
Right.
If you hadn't worked on your own sense of security, we can find a reason why that's not secure.
Right.
What if I get sick and then I can't do either? Like,
yeah. Oh, it's never ending. It's like a black hole. It's
And you're not. And here's the other thing I want. And this is so, so good that we're having this conversation, and I'm so glad we're having it for you right now, because I could see you going off on a trajectory in your life of trying to fill that hole with money.
Yeah.
And it's not going to fill it with money. You can't fill any of our holes, love hole, security hole, self-esteem hole. You cannot fill that with external stuff. Those kinds of core wounds, holes, you can only fill them from here.
Yeah.
So now, with what little energy you have, I would put those little bits of energy towards introspection around, what are the stories that continue to make me feel so insecure?
Okay.
What do I keep telling myself? How do I keep talking to myself? What scary stories do I keep telling myself about my safety? And where in my past did my sense of insecurity and safety come from? Because this is not irrational. This isn't irrational. This came from somewhere. And sometimes if we can kind of go, my dad used to say this, or my mom did this, or this happened to our family at this turning point, and everybody around me was feeling so insecure, that like, what is this in a reaction to? It's usually either we develop something, some way of being in the world as a reaction to something that happened, or we learned it by following our role models of that thinking pattern.
Yeah.
So digging a little over there and then going, how am I going to talk to myself differently? And how am I going to start to collect pieces of proof that I'll figure this out, that builds your sense of security and that you are secure? You have it's not pleasant to live with your parents. Believe me, I have lived with my parents. Like, when do we get out of here? But you have parents to live with.
Yeah.
That's a piece of security that some people do not have. So I want you to start collecting every day another piece of proof. Just keep a list. It doesn't have to be fancy on a piece of paper. What's another piece of proof that I have the privilege of security?
Yeah.
Because it comes from in here. You're so smart. Your intelligence. You have multiple things you can do in life. You have skills and strengths that can be put together in so many combinations, Sarah, that you're probably likely always going to figure out how to be employed. That is called security.
Okay.
You're white. That can go at the top of the list.
Right.
You're living in a first world country. Debatable, but
No, no, it is actually a privilege to be American in the workforce. Absolutely.
An American citizen?
Yeah. 100%. It's a big privilege. Yeah.
And it's a big piece of security.
Yeah.
You know, and it's important, not because it's like, I've got to be grateful for everything, not in that weird false way, but in a real way of like, oh, okay, I see it. I own it. I'm grateful for it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to dismiss it. Because here's the truth. A sign of the fact that you have a lot of security in life is you have the ability to dwell in your insecurity.
Yeah.
The fact that we're here discussing this problem, like, oh, but it's kind of navel gazing. Therapy is navel gazing, which is a privilege because it means you got a little extra time and energy to not be worrying about your life being immediately jeopardized.
Right. Yeah.
So that can go on the list too. But the great thing about that list is not for you to feel guilty about your blessings, but we want to use our blessings. And if we're kind of denying our blessings, that's not helpful to anybody. And Sarah, this is part of from the bigger picture perspective, this is part of what you have stated that you want to be and create in this world, is women with financial power.
Right.
And financial resources as someone who can take care of herself. And when women can take care of ourselves, then we're able to take care of others.
Right.
And help others rise too. And I know that this is who you want to be in this world.
Yeah.
And you owning that you have a great deal of security and none of it comes from your fucking employer. A little bit does. A little that I overstated. Some of it comes from your current employer, but more of it comes from the fact that you can go get another job.
Right.
Or you figure out another side business.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That will also help fill your energy tanks of like, oh, I've got this thing called life to the degree that any of us have got it. And you can only... Money helps, but nobody can control life. Too many variables, you know, too many things out there can take things away. So, okay. But you also can do things to put them back. Oh, Yeah. That's where your sense of security is going to come from. I can figure this out. I have resources. Yeah. That's what it really is, a list of resources. I've got resources I can figure out.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. That was really helpful.
Good. I want you to be a woman who makes a fuck ton of money, but doesn't need it to fill a hole.
Right.
Excited about having the resources to then to make a change in the world in some way, whatever way. I'm not even talking about, you don't have to save all the dolphins. I'm just saying.
No, because that's like my goal, my mission, I think, changed from like when I was a theater artist. Like I felt like I achieved that dream, and then I just stopped wanting it, and I went into like a different career path. And I now am, I think I'm recognizing I really want to be like a financially empowered woman, like, because I just had a lot of experience depending on like men to pay for me, or like, you know, other people to pay for me. And I really want to be able to pay for myself. I don't know. Anyway, but.
And I want you to feel secure every step of this way.
Right.
Instead of telling yourself the false story that, oh, at the end of it, with all the money, I will feel so secure.
Then you I'll be secure.
Absolutely will not.
Right.
You won't. Because you can just, here's proof. If anybody's like, no, I think I will feel secure with the money. Throw out a figure, $10 million.
Right. It's, oh, I'll wow, start imagining losing it.
And we did this together, right? It's like, how's that not enough? Because you can spend a whole story convincingly. Well, that's not enough money.
Yeah.
100 million. I can tell you how that's not enough money. It's never enough if you don't have enough. I want you to feel enough right here where you are in whatever parents' house you're sitting at with the job that you have and the weird boss, like everything. I want you to feel secure now. Because if you can, you've got it made. The rest is just doing things to make money. That's a game. You got this. Okay.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
I love you bring these like big questions. I love, I mean, the big topics, the big picture stuff. I love it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good to see you.
I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Beth, I see that you wrote something on the chat. I usually don't look at the chat because I cannot coach and look at the chat at the same time. My brain doesn't work on those two levels. You asked if you were, was it Cricket? Oh yes, Cricket, I did get your question and I was coming to you next. I thought it was, I'm sorry, I thought it was Beth who wrote that in. I don't even know what I'm talking about. Cricket, that's why I don't read the chat, you see? It would be moments of just watching me wander around and stare at walls. Okay, so Cricket, yes, you're next. Okay. So, you got two questions. Hello. How are you? How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. I haven't made as much progress in the last couple of weeks as I had in the previous 2 weeks. And I think it is energy bandwidth, just doing a lot of things. And but I realized that the questions that I emailed you are the ones that are most on my mind right now. And I think that getting these answered would really help me progress.
Awesome. Okay. So I'll read the first one. You wrote, oh, first of all, Cricket, she's a cash flow kitten and she specializes in film festival consultations for filmmakers who want to submit their films to festivals that will be a good fit.
Yes.
So your question is, I feel like I need to have a conversation with my boss about building a wall between the work that I do for the school, because she does similar work in her job for an institution, and the consulting work that I'm going to do on my own. So you want a nice clear demarcation between the two. I don't believe I've ever signed any sort of contract that says I can't either consult or consult specifically about festivals, but I do think the school could feel a bit proprietary since I've built the film festival department in the school from scratch and attained all the knowledge to do so while I was on the job. And a friend in business told me, think carefully about the firewall you are building between your consultancy and the school. It's wise for you to reassure them there's no conflict of interest, and emphasize the synergies that your business will attract more people to you because they will know you. Like, you can tell them about the school and they'll hear, you know, it'll shine brighter on the school that they have you as part of their like faculty mm-hmm. people, staff people. It's all good. It's a win-win. So my first question to you is, what did your friend mean by think carefully? Meaning, well, be careful, or think about this really strategically before you have the conversation.
Strategically. And yeah. And her point was, now she's Norwegian and is an attorney in Britain. So the laws are going to be different. And but one of the things that she said was, you know, you want to make sure that you're clear with them. Because I am not in a position where I can afford to leave the school yet, although mm-hmm. that is certainly my goal. And so she wanted me to think strategically about ways to make sure that I'm creating a separation of church and state, if you will. And mm-hmm. one of the things that I've already done, Christine, I think I told you that I did a QR code that led to a Google form to mm-hmm. that I've been sharing to get people's information for my mailing list, which I haven't really started sending anything yet. I've sent a little thing. And on that is, are you a student or alum of this school? And if, and then another question is, are you interested in information about this school? And what's interesting is that some people said yes. And so I told my boss this last week, I was like, hey, I was at this event and I got 4 email addresses for people who are interested in the school. And he's like, great, send them to admissions. So that's already, but that was a very low key. I was moderating a panel. Mm-hmm. I wasn't making any money. So I think that's more the topic, the strategy, and how to have a bigger conversation, or if I should.
Question number 2. Alumni. Mm-hmm. Why would alumni be off? Like if an alumni of the school knows you and wants to work with you on this, I mean, can the school doesn't provide the alumni with any kind of information once they're graduated, right?
Well, this is, I actually work with a lot of alumni mm-hmm. because I'm working with them on their final films.
Okay.
So the final films are delivered for a grade in the last semester, at the very end of the last semester, and then they graduate. So it's very common for me to work with alumni for a good 2 years.
For which you get paid to do.
For which I get paid.
Okay, great. Then yes, they are off limits.
Yes. And those are, it's really important that they have that support. So I was just thinking, like, what if it's an alum from 5 years ago?
I was going to say they're actually only off limits for that final film. If they go do a second film, mm-hmm. you would think if they had a great experience with your knowledge on that film, they would naturally want to come back. And it's not like they can come back to the school and get you for free.
No.
Yeah. So I think that it's like, of course, I'm going to continue the work as I'm doing it now with, you know, recent graduates on their thesis film or whatever you guys call it, your final film.
Thesis film. Yes.
Yeah. Like, so I think that.
Can I just say something mm-hmm. while you're thinking? Mm-hmm. In the past, so this school is now a college and fully accredited college, but in the past, it was a very entrepreneurial boot camp type place. Mm-hmm. And in the past, a situation like what you just pitched, where it's a former student coming back, they would figure out a deal for that former student. Like, yes, you can use Cricut services. We're going to charge you X number of dollars.
Okay.
And then they're going to benefit greatly from it. And then I'm going to get paid my regular salary.
Okay.
And so for that reason, I do feel a little nervous about interacting with alumni from
Agreed. Way back. If they would do something like that, we're like, oh, no, no, we'll take your money and we'll make this special little case for you. Yeah, that's what they would likely still do. Yeah. So that means that students and alumni of the school are off limits.
I think so.
Yeah.
Unless it is a special situation where I know the alum really well and I can just be very clear about, like, this is just between you and me.
Yeah. So the tension here, first of all, you need to go through anything you've signed, your employee agreement, anything, mm-hmm. the handbook, you know, for employees, just to make sure that there's nothing okay. in there that says non-compete in any kind of form.
Okay.
There probably isn't, but you just want to be 100% sure. Because the tension here is you can't go into this asking for their permission.
Right.
Because they're not in a position to grant you permission of whatever the heck you want to do on your own.
Mm-hmm.
However, the tension exists that they could give you the ultimatum of, like, if you do that, we will fire you for whatever reason. If they got to be that would be a stupid decision on their part, but they wouldn't just fire you for having the proposed idea, mm-hmm. but they could give you the ultimatum and then you could decide, okay, well, I'll table this until I'm ready to leave, kind of thing. The catch 22 is this right. is the thing that will help you leave.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, I get it. So I think your friend is 100% right. And it's, you want it to be flattering to mm-hmm. them. You want it to speak to their agenda and you want them to see how this is a win-win. So the flattering part that you lead with is like the experience that students have at this school is amazing. And it has been such a privilege to be a part of building the stuff that you offer.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that this school can lead a student from introduction to the craft all the way through not just a feature film, but then with my expertise, helping them, you know, get it seen.
Right.
This is an amazing experience that I love to be a part of. And I'm so glad you're doing it because I think it's a real contribution to the industry. You can steal all of those words. They have
been I love recorded. All of them.
So that's the flattery.
Yes.
The second part is the sad thing is that all of that is only really available to students who choose this school. Do I wish everyone was choosing this school? I 100% do. But there are folks out there who've put their heart and soul into making movies, and they haven't necessarily had the foundational education that a school like this provides to them.
Mm-hmm.
But some of them have really created these little gems that would be so tragic if they weren't really seen or seen as widely as they could. And I'm really feeling called to serve our community in that way.
Hmm.
Helping these filmmakers not just throw money at the festivals and keep their fingers crossed and miss all the deadlines and pay the higher fees for festivals right. that aren't even right for their films. I really want them to understand how to match a film to a festival, to get organized so they don't have to pay more for the privilege of submission. And then if they get submitted, how they can actually leverage that.
Right.
I feel very called to work with people who haven't had the privilege of going through this school.
Mm-hmm.
So you flattered them. you've now painted the picture of why you want to help these other filmmakers. And so I wanted to let you know that as I'm creating the structure for my consultancy, I wanted you to know that I'm putting certain things in place to make this a win-win for us both.
Uh-huh.
Thing number one, I'm not working with students or alumni of this school because I know that they can come back and they can get the resources they need here. And I will continue, you know, I'm already helping them and they're learning a lot from me on their first film, blah, blah, blah. Point number one.
Mm-hmm.
Point number two, the more I go out and am meeting these filmmakers at various stages in their life, and I'm able to go speak at events and represent myself, I'm also being able to represent the school. Should anybody ask me, gee, where should I go? Where do you think I'm going to send them?
Right.
In fact, on my questionnaire form for people who are interested in working with me, I have a line item that says, and are you interested in information about this school? And I've just talked at one event and already mm-hmm. have sent four people to your admissions office.
Right.
This is something where as my business grows and my reputation grows, that's only going to reflect stronger at the school, on the school, because you guys were smart enough to bring me on and let me build this for this department for you.
Mm-hmm.
So I see this as very win-win-win. And I just wanted to let you know that I have your back. Period.
Yes. Yes.
And you can either, if you can, mm-hmm. do that in person, or you can just write it all out and hand it over and let them think about it. It's probably the better way to do.
This is really good because I can see I've been laying the foundation for these points you've made. Also, I did have a conversation with my boss about 6 weeks ago where I told him how financially strapped I am. The fact that I took a pay cut, many people took a pay cut during mm-hmm. Pandemic, and that I've had to buy a car, inflation, student mm-hmm. loan debt, like all this stuff. And I was like, none of this is your problem, but I bring so much prestige to the school. I'd like to be making double my salary. I had that conversation with him 6 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that there's no way that he can increase my salary right now.
That's huge leverage. Okay. So I wouldn't include it in the initial thing,
uh-huh.
but that is the point that if they come back to you with any resistance, you go, well, here's the thing. I took a pay cut to help because your bottom line needed me to do that in order for this school to sustain itself. I believe in this school. I like working here. I took that pay cut. I know that you don't have the means to actually pay me what my current level of expertise now, you know, what's the word? Like now that the market would bear mm-hmm. for someone with my expertise. And I don't want to go anywhere else, but I have to find a way to compensate financially so that I can stay. So that's the card you pull out. This is great. So great. The fact that you took a fucking pay cut is like, look, guys, I got mama's got to eat. So yeah. Let me do this. Although you're not asking for permission, but I'm going to do this so I can stay working with you. If you would like me to stay working with you, I'm going to do this. But you don't need to play that card unless you need to play that card. And you play that card with a neutral tone. You're not threatening. You're not tossing an ultimatum. You're painting a picture for them. Look, guys, this pandemic hit us all hard.
Mm-hmm.
The school asked us to pitch in taking a pay cut, which I did because I love my job, love being here, love working with these students. Such a good institution. Flattery, flattery. But in order for me to financially sustain this position, which isn't going to be able to get a raise and certainly not to the level that the market would bear for someone with my expertise, I have to come up with another financial source of income.
Right.
And this is it.
Yeah.
Period. And you stop talking, but it's neutral. You know, you're just like, let me paint this picture for you. So this is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And you don't need to go into the car. You don't need to go into any of that. It's like, look, I took a pay cut. This is what you then give to me.
Right.
No, you might not get any resistance.
I already talked about the car. So that's already out there. He already knows.
Great.
So, but this is fantastic because I do think, my boss knows that he would be shooting himself in the foot. If
one would hope he would know. Yes.
He pushed back. I think that this is really helpful. The neutral tone too, as well, because really, and this is the result of working with you in this group and with Miata and Abundance Bound, that just, I don't have to be emotional about it. I don't have to take it personally. It really is like, I need money. I bring high quality.
It's math. Okay. So the next little card you have in your back pocket, less leverage. That's why you wouldn't play it unless you have to. But if they're really pushing back, which I don't actually think they're going to do, you could say, okay, I hear what you're saying. Like, this would be the pushback of like, if you do this, we will fire you. And you go, you know what? That is totally your choice. I encourage you though, to play that out. Because if I do lose this job, then I am going to go full force, balls to the walls with my consultancy.
Yeah.
I am going to meet so many filmmakers and so many aspiring filmmakers that I could send back to your school.
Mm-hmm.
But I would feel less inclined to do so.
Yeah.
Just letting you know that then there would be, you'd be losing. You know, what you're not saying is I'm out there bad mouthing you, but you're saying you'd be losing an advocate. You'd be losing a high profile advocate.
Right.
But you don't need to play that card unless you need to play that card. But do you see, and for everybody listening, what's important about the flattery conversation, the second conversation, this is why we record it, because I even forget what I'm saying. The second part of the conversation, which was, this is what I'm going to do. And then the third part of the conversation, you're always creating and speaking to their agenda. Oh, yes, it was flattery. Then this is how it could be. This is why I'm doing this. I feel called to do this. And
called to do this. Yes.
And then the third is how this would be a win-win. So each of the conversations.
Yes.
Plus the two little cards you have in your back pocket are speaking to their bottom line.
Yeah.
Their agenda. You want to keep me. I am an asset. But not because, okay, a lot of people who want to do something like this or have a conversation, they kind of come in and lead with, I need this. I need this. I need this. And then and the economic, I need this. And it's like, they don't care. But if you come in with, this is what you will gain from me doing this. This is what you could lose from me doing this. This is how I so want to support the school. Now you're speaking their language.
Yes.
Because all they are thinking about is student retention, student acquisition, student retention, having happy, successful alumni, and their bottom line. That's all institutions are thinking about 24/7.
And I've started making this list of screens around the world that produced at my school has appeared.
You're good.
I got annoyed the other day when one of my other bosses, not my direct boss, didn't seem to understand that something someone had achieved is because I saw the film. I tracked that student down. I tracked that student down so hard until he could not submit the film. And then he got into it. And that's going to be all over California televisions and then possibly at the Cannes Film Festival in 2023.
Yeah. You have ammunition for days and you're so intelligent that you're going to be able, I mean, that is an example of how you know how to use it and find it and construct it and paint the picture.
It was really kind of exciting to think about where in the world has this statement, because it's the last statement on a film, right? Produced at. Mm-hmm. Where has that been seen?
Yeah.
I was really proud of myself for thinking of that.
and acquiring that kind of statistic and data set for the institution is a huge PR piece that they can use in their marketing.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
This many screens around the world, this many countries, all these countries, like all these festivals, like 100%. If they don't get it, they're A, stupid, but you can teach them.
Right.
And this is what it is. It's acquiring this skill when you're met with resistance from anybody. Mm-hmm. If you can paint the picture and shift their perspective, you can get what you want usually. That skill in a nice neutral tone, you're thinking of it like this, but let me paint you the picture that I'm seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And have their perspective shift, because you can't convince anybody of anything. Every one of us convinces ourselves. You paint the picture, they shift their perspective. Because they're like, oh, I see it differently now. I see what she's seeing. Okay. You're giving them a different lens to look through.
Yeah.
And then when they do look through the lens, if they're smart, then they convince themselves that this new perspective is actually a better one.
Okay.
Yeah. Man, if you can acquire that skill in life, it's handy. It's handy and can apply it in a lot of ways. But this is why the mindset work is so important, because our emotions are not in our control in the moment. We get sweaty. I do too. I get dry mouth. I get sweaty. I get nervous. I get adrenalized. You know, when I care about something, or when I'm trying to fight for something, right, or when I'm irritated, someone is not getting what I'm trying to, like, I get all the emotions too. But can you stay centered,
mm-hmm,
and paint the picture rather than getting defensive and tight?
Right.
Can you just keep painting the picture and be curious about what they're not understanding and then trying to figure it out instead of force feeding your rightness, but I'm right.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no. You're not going to convince them. They have to convince themselves.
I think it also helps a little bit that I'm so tired of them. I'm kind of like, if you want to fire me over doing amazing work,
yes,
you're the dummy.
That's huge leverage. Getting yourself to the point, and what that is when you say, like, I'm over it, what that actually is you're energetically detached. You're like, whatever.
Yes.
I can see you over here complaining and bitching and moaning. You can dance that dance all. I'm just going to sit over here till you're tired.
Have you heard this expression, quiet quit?
No.
It's pretty new, but it's basically happening all over the place post-pandemic, that people are just like, I'm not going to be a cog in the capitalistic machine anymore. I'm going to do my job, but not extra.
Yeah. Which you should.
What's
the fucking extra? You know what the extra is?
Yeah.
The extra is we're understaffed.
Exactly.
That's what the extra is.
That's what it is. Or the extra is you feel insecure, so you work harder than you should, mm-hmm. which is basically what has happened.
And what it really, really, a lot of that comes down to, and I was actually just about to post this either today or tomorrow, get it up mm-hmm. in the Abundance Bound platform. But I just heard an excellent little YouTube video of a psychiatrist explaining the trauma mm-hmm. and the behaviors that we take on because of that. He explains it so kindly, not making us wrong for it, but it's like, he details out like, this is why you people please. It's this yeah. dysfunctional pattern of you yeah. learned how to walk on eggshells and you know, it's sort of a manipulation. You know, I talk about like a huge energy leak.
Yes.
Trying to manage someone else's feelings. But we learn that in childhood, like, our little inner children is like, we have to do this to be safe. And it's like, not as an adult. Mm-hmm. And it's a great video because it can help you go, oh, that's what I'm doing. And that's why I'm doing it. And I don't need to do that anymore.
I would love to see that. Is that you? Where are you going to post it?
I'll post it in the community okay, for Abundance great. Bound on the Mighty Networks platform.
Right.
It's excellent because it's not just, I'm not good at that. It's like, no, you probably learned coping mechanisms mm-hmm. when you were little and you're applying them to your job. So
right.
I say this because I don't want to, degrade isn't the right word, but there's a word that starts with D that I'm searching for, but I don't want to have someone feeling bad that they're like, oh, I am a people pleaser. I do extra at work. I'm like, yeah, you shouldn't, but here maybe is why you're doing it. It's not, right. you're not doing it because you're an idiot. It's not helpful for you.
Yeah.
But you're not doing it because you're dumb. You're doing it because it was an old coping mechanism that worked.
Right.
But it's not appropriate in the workforce. And people take advantage of you if you're still doing that as an adult.
Very true.
Yeah. So this is, I love the quiet quit. I don't think it should be a quiet quit. I think that's how you should do your job. I was true. Always of the fact, like, no one is paying me. You're paying me to do the job. You're not paying me to be loyal to you. That would cost a lot more. Mm. You're not paying me, quote, what I'm worth. I'm taking this job because I see the other benefits from this job. And you're going to get a solid 85% from me. Because I know my 85% is way better than whatever the other person was giving you who was in this chair before me. I just knew I had that confidence. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah. Yeah. Do your job, clock out, and then go do what you really want to do in life. That's what they're paying you for.
It's
and don't damage them. Don't steal the Post-its. Just do your job. It's on the company. If there's more work than you can do mm-hmm. in your 40 hours, that is not a you problem. That is a them problem.
It sure is.
Yeah.
It sure is. And I think that the pushback on that is really important. Mm-hmm. You know, I did have a second question.
Yes, you did. Okay. Bringing Christine back on track. I love it. You're a good educator. Second question. Following the question above, I'm hesitant to go big on social media. Part of me thinks I should do some badass instructional TikTok, Instagram reels, and the other part of me doesn't want to expose myself on social media like that for the school to see. My instinct is to focus on writing instructional articles and getting them published and finding targeted speaking engagements and using those instead to build my client base. Then just use my personal Instagram to publish pictures of my clients and students on the red carpets and on panels, but not for instructional videos. 1,000%. 1,000% your instinct is right. Because for you, this isn't the advice I'd give to everybody, but mm-hmm. for you feeding your potential audience, these little tiny nuggets of gold, mm-hmm. the only eyeballs that are going to stay there are the people who are like, I really need to do all this for free and I really can't afford her. So,
gotcha.
taking all the time that you would spend creating and doing those videos and going out and finding places that teach about film, mm-hmm. not schools, but other independent kind of things that teach about film, but don't have the festival component. They like go through the whole process and end with like, and now you have a film. It's like, and right. what do you do with it? Yes. And any, like, you know, all of these, what is it? Independent Film West. I think that was the old name. They may mm-hmm. have it, but like those kind of organizations that yes. filmmakers join, yes. like all that stuff, 100%. You just have to Great. Make sure that when, because you're a teacher and I know you like to teach, but you have to understand that when you give a speech, it's about marketing.
Yes.
Okay. 50%. Yes. Here's some good stuff. And then the other content is why that's not enough. But you can't tell them in an, you can't speak uh-huh. to a, you can't speak to a whole group of filmmakers about what you, third row from the left, should exactly do for your film. Mm-hmm. That's a conversation between you and me. That's a conversation. I need to see your film. I need to like really drill in. I need us to like powwow. I need to know how much your budget is and how we can use that money to get you what you want. That is a conversation I have with each one of you, not all of you here at once. But you see, you contextualize it yeah. for them. So it doesn't seem like you're holding something back, because that's the cheesiest. Well, I there's 10 things you need to know and I'll tell you 5 of them. Then you pay me for the last 5. That's not what you're saying. You're saying it would be impossible for me to consult with 150 clients all at once, because you each have different projects in different stages.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And that is the beauty of my work, is it's so specifically geared to exactly your film, your goals, your budget.
Okay.
You say that at the beginning of your talk, and then, but while we are here and while I have all of you, let me share some stuff that will help all of you.
Yeah.
And then you're off to the races.
You know, it's really interesting too, because that's very helpful about part education, part marketing, part mm-hmm. We need to have more of a conversation. I have a former coworker who does a lot of work with high schools for arts. Mm-hmm. And I think that could be a really great market too. Like the students coming out of the schools with projects like oh. Idlewild and their Idle Interlochen and like big fancy private boarding schools.
That's yeah. If you feel that those, are there enough of those students who feel like ready to be kind of professional with the project that they've done? Or are they all just thinking, this is the project that gets me to college?
Oh, it can be a combination.
Okay. As long you can certainly investigate it and see if it's yeah. if you're tapping a rich mine.
You know what? I mean, that's a really great idea to investigate it. I have a couple of contacts that I could ask that question of, mm-hmm. because you're right. Are they just trying to get into college where they're going to study film more, or yeah. do they actually have something that they could get into festivals?
Yeah. Like, yeah. So that would be my only question. Like, how many of them are ready to be your clients?
Yes.
That's okay. The point.
Good question. That,
because for me, I want you to look now at where are my potential clients. Mm-hmm. Once you have a thriving business, mm-hmm. then you can go play the longer game, which is talking to like those private arts
right.
pre-college things, because that is planting seeds of like, hey kids, when you graduate from college, you need to call me with your film. Don't make this mistake. So many of your, you know, you be the smart ones. So that's planting seeds for maybe a couple years. And every once in a while, there'll be some kid who is ready to go, like Steven Spielberg, like forget college. I'm ready to go. But I think, so you see, I want you to go for the money.
Yeah.
Get some money. Yeah. And that's play the longer game. But since you have connections at those places, what you might do with those connections is ask them, where do you think I should be? Tapping veins. And you could use speaking at those places a time or two just to kind of get your juices flowing on educating / marketing.
Right.
Because it's a low stakes, because not every one of them is going to be your client. So
yeah.
So you can use it since you have direct contacts, but you can also ask those contacts like, hey, where else?
Right.
And then maybe ask them, because I don't know, I could be wrong, but ask them like, how many of your students would hire me and then, you know, with this project?
With these projects. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, where do these students go?
Well, this is really helpful because I think I was getting a little ahead of myself about thinking like, I need to get a client ASAP, but actually I think I need to get a client soon, but I need to focus on building this foundation.
What foundation?
Writing the articles, or like organizing myself to write articles.
No, I want you to start opening your mouth, because you can get, you can hide behind writing an article, and then where are you going to publish?
I have to do research on that.
Yeah. Don't do that second. Okay. Speaking, and even if you just contacted people at places that helped, maybe they would be willing to list you in a directory or just refer you. If someone had lunch with you and really liked you, they'd be like, I'll refer all my students to you. I don't care.
Okay.
Like, why don't we just assume there's a more immediate path that you don't have to do all this efforting for?
Okay.
You do this very specific thing, and if people kind of feel their students need it, why wouldn't they just tell them about you?
True.
Who knows? Or just go, you know, what could we do together? Is this, and are there podcasts that you could pitch yourself to?
Yes.
Be like, hey, you know, I've listened to your first 50 episodes, and I see that you know, I like the way you're talking. I like, you know, to listen to 50, but you know, skim. What you're looking for is, do they have guests and have they talked about festivals, and how have they talked about festivals? Because you can go in like, if you wrote a letter that said, I've noticed that like 6 out of your 150 episodes have discussed festivals, but this is something about festivals you haven't really touched on yet. And I really think it's something your audience, you know, if you agree with me, that it's something your audience would really benefit from, because I think it helps them like this and this and this. I'd love to have a conversation.
Great.
The fact that a podcast has already talked about festivals just means that they're open to the festival conversation, and you just need to find the angle they haven't covered yet.
Okay.
Because that's getting you and your voice right in front of the people who are listening to podcasts to gain information about festivals. That's who you want, versus you writing articles and then figuring out how to publish them and then going through a gatekeeper and then blah, blah, blah. I want you to be asked to write an article before you write an article. But that's not, I don't think that's the quickest way to get clients.
Okay.
Because
that's helpful.
What you're saying to somebody is, I want you to work with me. Yeah. And one of the things people have to have in place to work with someone is they have to like you. They have to be like, oh, she's really smart, but I also like her. Not, oh, God, I can't stand the sound of her voice, or I don't like the way she delivered the material. And podcasts and being interviewed on things and getting yourself on video or talking in front of a group of people is how you show people, hey, that they like you. That is the reason I do videos talking about, I did videos that talked about kind of like life coachy stuff. And I now do videos that talk about caregiving, not because I'm sitting there giving instructional tips. I'm doing it so you can be like, you like me? You like me? Because if you like me, I got a lot I can help you with. But I know you have to like me as a coach first to even consider working with me as a coach.
Right.
Okay. So that is strategic marketing. Whereas an article, it might be like, well, that was a good article. I skimmed it. I got 2 tips. you're not looking for people who just want to read an article. You're looking for people who want to put their money down because they want the fast track.
That's true.
People only pay for coaches because they want to move forward faster.
Faster.
That's it.
It's so true.
Figure out everything really in creating true. Cash flow. Everything I even wrote in creating cash flow, aside from a few things, you can find it for free out there.
Yeah.
But it's all put in one place and I'll help you with your specific sticking points and you'll move faster.
It's so true.
Yeah.
It's so true.
And no, if you didn't
I've already said to people that enrolling in this group, this work with you, has gotten me much faster than I would have gotten me much further than I would have gotten just trying to do this on my own, much further.
Yeah. And the truth of the matter is, if you didn't like me and the way I deliver this information, there are other people delivering this exact same information. Quality people.
Interesting.
My colleagues, quality people who could get you the same thing. But we just kind of pick people that we like, that are in our price range, that are just, yeah. Same is going to happen to you. She's a little more expensive, but she's so nice. And she just really knows what she's talking about. And she got us results.
Yeah.
Great. And
wonderful.
Your business is going to also be based on referrals.
Mm-hmm.
It, a lot. People will tell people about, how did you get into, you work with Cricket. She's amazing.
I think that's very
true. That's why you need to get out there, get in front of people, open your mouth and start telling people you do this. That is step one.
You're right. As soon as you said that, I was like, oh, I know exactly who I can call.
Yeah. Everybody, you know,
mm-hmm.
everybody, you know, instead of going big on social media, you take your own email, not your work email list, your personal email list and go,
yes.
Just letting you guys know, I am starting this.
Yeah.
Who doesn't know someone who has a film?
Come on, this town?
In this town, in America, everyone's working on a script or a film or, yeah, come on.
Yeah.
Come
on.
It's the thing. So you go through your personal contact list
mm-hmm.
just in case. You meet somebody at a dinner party who starts telling you that they're close to finishing their film. I want to let you know that I do this now.
Yeah.
I'm open for business. And they'd be idiots not to include this line item in their budget.
They would be idiots.
They would be idiots. That's your energy. Your energy has to be, you would be ridiculous.
Don't give up now.
But it's sort of like, and I might even say this in a talk to people, I really think you could put filmmakers into two groups. The filmmakers who know the value of putting this line item in their budget
mm-hmm.
and raising just that little extra bit of money to do it, and the filmmakers who don't.
Wow. Okay.
And it's not that the filmmakers who don't won't make it. It's just that the filmmakers who put this in their line item in their budget will likely make it faster.
Yeah.
So you're not putting the other people down. It's like, no, you can still make it. But if you're in the group that decides to put this line item in their budget, the chances are way more likely this group of the people are the ones who make it faster.
Right. Excellent. Excellent.
This recording is like gold for you.
It is gold. I'm going to be listening to it again. I mean, I also wrote 3 pages of notes.
I saw you. I'm like, oh, girl. Oh, wow. Okay, good, good.
Because I am of an age where I write I learned how to write great notes when I was 12 and I've never stopped. So
yeah, I was excellent note taker. Organized.
Yes.
But so. It helps. It's another way of ingraining it in your brain is yes. if you are writing things out. So this is such a good idea.
Thank you so much.
Phase one contract, make sure you didn't sign anything. Then have the conversation, clear that out, and then fucking go for it, Cricket.
Okay. That's great. That's mm-hmm. great. You know, this means I have to clean my office. Damn it.
Yes. it will shift the energy and makes room for the new clients to come in.
All right. I know you're right.
Guarantee. That's my professional organizing guarantee.
I was just going to say, here came the organizer just came out.
Yep. It's magic. Like it is magic in that way.
Oh my gosh. All right. Thank you.
All right.
You.
Okay.
Thank you so Take much. Care. I really appreciate it. Bye. Bye.
Bye, Beth. Thank you too.